Hello and welcome to the Under the Dome podcast. I'm Ben Belton. I'm here with a special guest to start the show today. I will introduce her in just a second. But this is the first episode, really, of the Under the Dome podcast in the fact that it's the first one since the rebrand. We used to be the Irish Coffee podcast. So if you're a little bit confused by the name, I'll explain some of that a little bit later once I get to bring Danny in. But like I say, right now, I am joined here with, Lisa Kelly, who is the author of the Men We Became book. Did I get that right, Lisa?
Yep, that's it.
So I'm doing pretty well already. So just to give our listeners a little bit of a teaser about what the book's about, could just give us a little bit of an idea of what they can expect when they go to Amazon or the Notre Dame bookstore and buy your book off the shelf.
Absolutely. I actually have two books right now. So the first one came out in 2013. So that's Echoes from the End Zone, The Men We Became. And the new one is The Men We Became, More Echoes from the End Zone. So the two books tell the stories of a series of former Notre Dame football players, chronicles how they got to Notre Dame, what their experiences were like, and then where their lives went after football.
Okay, so, all right, I actually didn't know that there were two books, so now I'm learning things, which is great. How long? So the first one came out in 2013,
correct.
You said.
Yep.
How long did it take to compile all of the information in either one of those two books?
The first book actually went pretty fast. I was doing a series on my blog called Where Are They Now? And I was really frustrated with the fact that the media tends to focus on the negative stories. So you're very quick to hear a story about a player who gets kicked out of school or gets a DUI. You never hear all these really great positive stories. So that's how the blog series came to life. The first story was Oscar McBride, and his story had 3,000 hits. The second story was Rick Meyer, and his had 10,000 hits. So pretty quickly I realized I had something that wasn't only important to me, but it was important to a lot of fans. So I did my first interview in May of 2012. I had 32 interviews between May and January of 2013. I wrote the book in February and March. We edited in April and May, sent the book to the publisher in June. I had a book in my hand in August. So in about 15 months, from beginning to end, to have the first book. So it was pretty fast.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I got to ask, and you sort of started to touch on this, that you were kind of doing it as a blog first, but where did the idea for this come from? Like what, and like, how did you, I guess really what I'm interested in is how you started, like how do you reach out to these players? How do you get their information, and where does all of that come from?
Right. So my frustrations about the media came about through, I was in a contest. I had been in a contest the previous 6 months to be the biggest fan of the Big East Conference. So they picked one blogger from every school in the conference, and we competed with writing assignments. And it was through that contest that I became really frustrated with how the media was portraying athletes. So I reached out to Oscar McBride. He was a friend of mine in college, and that was how the interview with Oscar took place. He and I had kind of brainstormed, hey, wouldn't it be great to do a series of interviews and just kind of spotlight all of the really great things that athletes are doing, because there's so many good stories that you just don't ever hear about. And so, and you know, with the second interview being Rick Meyer, he was the quarterback of my class. So I started out with guys that I knew, and then they helped me by introducing me to other people. You know, I kind of looked people up on LinkedIn and Facebook and pitched the idea and said, hey, you know, I'm doing this. Would you be interested in being a part of it? And overwhelmingly, everyone was really excited about it. And felt it was a great way to showcase all the wonderful things that they do after football.
Okay. All right. So I don't want you to give away too much of the content of your book, but is there a particular story or a particular interview of a former player, or just a way that you, I don't know, got the information of a former player, anything that's particularly interesting or something that's your favorite, I guess?
My favorite story from the new book is Pat Fallon.
Okay.
So Pat Fallon played on the 88 team. When you ask him what position he played, he says wide out. When you ask his wife, she says left out because he didn't play very much. he did Air Force ROTC and Notre Dame football all at the same time, which is a huge undertaking. He served in the Air Force till he was 26. Then he started his own business. And then he decided to dabble in politics. So Pat is now in the House of Representatives in the state of Texas. And then this year he decided to embark upon raising money for pediatric cancer. So he ran the World Marathon Challenge. He ran 7 marathons in 7 consecutive days on 7 continents. It's an incredible story.
You know what? I definitely heard the story of the person doing that. I didn't realize that he was a former Notre Dame student, let alone a former Notre Dame football player. And I kind of can't believe I didn't know that. Any plans to continue with anything like this or any writing about Notre Dame in general?
Absolutely. I think now that I've done 2 books on football, I think my next venture is going to be to kind of do a multi-sport book. I mean, I think I will still include some football. Everybody loves football. But I think there's some great stories, you know, basketball players, hockey players, get some women's athletes. I found a couple really great stories of student managers. So, you know, I have a 2-star general and some interesting things up my sleeve. So I'm excited about kind of spreading my wings a little bit from football but continuing to tell the Notre Dame story.
Okay. So is anything in the works right now, or are you just kind of in a lull period where you're just kind of planning a little bit?
Right now I'm on a book tour, so it's been a
little bit. Oh, okay.
So, and I
all right.
have a full-time day job, so, you know, life is a little nutty in the fall.
Yes, I hear that. Just for our listeners, we've got some Notre Dame listeners, some of them in my family. What year did you graduate from Notre Dame?
I graduated in 93.
Okay. And I know that the big thing among Notre Dame students is to immediately ask where you stayed during the time that you were on campus.
I lived in Siegfried, which was a brand new dorm at the time. It's now a guy's dorm. So I know Mike Golic Jr. lived in Siegfried. So.
Okay. I had, I know of one of my uncles who went to Notre Dame who stayed in Alumni Hall, and I thought, I mean, that was always cool for me because I went to a couple camps, athletic camps at Notre Dame when I was in high school, and I got to stay in a room probably, he doesn't remember what room he was in, to my knowledge, but probably on the same floor or something along those lines. So it was cool there, and I've gotten to stay in Duncan also, so that was always fun.
Which is beautiful.
Yeah, it sure is. That's really it for questions for me. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you wanted to, wanted to interject about the book that maybe I missed?
I just think the book is a great spotlight of all the wonderful things that Notre Dame athletes do post-football. I mean, typically the average NFL career is about 2.9 years, so that's why they call it not for long. And I feel like Notre Dame does such a great job at molding and shaping these guys into exemplary citizens. And then they go on to do these wonderful things that no one ever hears about. So that's kind of my job, to share the good news. And it's fun to hear them reminisce about their playing days. I mean, that's an important part of the book too, is them sharing, you know, not only their favorite game moments, but there's a lot of really funny Lou Holtz stories. And, you know, the guys kind of like to throw each other under the bus a little bit and have a good time with it.
Yeah. I think part of the reason that Notre Dame has been such a big part of my family and it's a big part of a lot of people's lives is because people, regardless of if they went to school there or not, they really believe in, I don't know, the whole mission, I guess. The fact that Notre Dame makes not only good football players, but good people as well. And that's why, even in rough years like this year, for instance, there's
Right.
still 82,000 people that pack that stadium on every home Saturday. So that's one of the things that I enjoy most about being a Notre Dame fan, which is why I was really drawn to, I don't know, to approach you about this, about these books that you have written. So I'll definitely be checking it out, and good chance I get one for my dad for Christmas. So so I'm looking forward to it. So I'm definitely gonna do a little bit more research into that and get myself a copy for sure. So thanks for coming on. This was really great.
And if anyone's interested, the website is themenwebecamend.com. And it'll link you to Amazon, Barnes and Noble. And then if you want a signed copy, I do signed copies. They're $20, free shipping, a gift wrap. So check it out.
Very good stuff. Very good stuff. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on. We'll be in touch in the future, I'm sure. And whenever that next book comes out, we might just have to have you on again.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Under the Dome podcast, formerly known as the Irish Coffee Podcast. We're delivering our 15th episode now. This is the first one under the Under the Dome name. And the reason for the switch, I guess you could say, is that I and Danny and some others are starting a new site over in the Sports Daily Network called Golden Domer Daily. We rebranded so that this kind of went with the, I don't know, the whole theme of the Golden Dome type deal. And henceforth, we are here delivering you the Under the Dome podcast. The hope is that this is the last rebrand of the podcast. We've gone through a couple, but like I say, we're just happy to be back. We're happy that the Irish beat Army 44 to, is it 7? 6. It was 6. Goodness.
Oh, my
44 to,
goodness. You
man,
said
I
they
had a
were going to
blank
win
moment there.
55 to nothing, and they didn't.
I thought it would be, well, I wasn't that far off, but
You were right.
DeShone Kizer doesn't throw an interception in the red zone. They make it to 50, so whatever. But anyway, the guy that you just heard talk, that's Danny Cunningham. I'm Ben Belden. Danny, how's it going?
I'm terrific. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. Had a long day at work today, but I'm glad to be
Wow,
home.
what happened?
It's just one of those days where slept till the absolute last minute because I was exhausted. Got to school at the last minute that I'm supposed to, basically. Basketball practice right after school. And now I'm home and it just feels like I haven't had any time to think or catch my breath at all. But hey, it is what it is. It's what I signed up for.
Is it?
Sort of.
Not
But
cool.
anyway, like I said, the Irish beat Army this past weekend, and some people are really excited, some people don't really care. Where do you fall on that spectrum, Danny?
I like when Notre Dame wins, so that's cool. I mean, I'm not like super pumped about this win the way I would be, say, if they would have beat Texas or Michigan State or Stanford or any of the games that they've lost. But I'm like not upset that they won or anything. So it's just kind of meh at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me that our fourth win of the season would come against Army in the Shamrock Series game, I would have told you that I'm probably not going to watch a whole lot of Notre Dame football this year. Now, I've watched
But
every
you
game.
host a podcast, so you do watch a lot of Notre
Yeah,
Dame football this year.
exactly. So, I guess we've kind of made this our somewhat unofficial job to watch Notre Dame football and talk about it every week and all of that good stuff. Give me one good thing from Army, the best thing that you can think of, give me one bad thing that you saw in their win against Army.
The best thing I can think of, well, it has to be the fact that Notre Dame is 15th in the country in the in their passing defense.
Oh,
that,
boy.
That's an incredible stat, right? Right? Because that numbers never lie, man.
Numbers never lie. There's like an ESPN show called that or something.
There used to be, but big shout out to playing in a hurricane and facing two option offenses in like a 5-week span. Because that's how you take a very below average secondary and put them into the top 15 in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. What about one thing you didn't like?
This really isn't like an on the field thing, but I wasn't a huge fan of the uniforms.
Okay.
And I'm a fashionista.
The cool kids like to say. Yeah.
And I really wasn't a huge fan. I didn't like the color green. I thought the shoulders were too detailed to see. Like, I'm sure if you were up close looking to it, like if I'm holding a jersey, I'm sure that looks dope. But I'm watching on TV. And if I'm not watching on TV, I'm sitting in a press box or sitting in the stands. And I can't see the shoulder really. It just looks like a bunch of scribble. And the helmets were pretty cool. But the jerseys and pants, I was kind of, I mean, they weren't the worst thing I've ever seen. But they were kind of,
Yeah, when they announced the jerseys back in whatever month that was, probably August. I guess I put together that they were playing in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome. I didn't really realize that they were playing against Army on Veterans Day weekend. So I guess the more I think about it, like that's kind of where that planning came from. As far as the jerseys are concerned, I really liked the helmet part. Like you said, I don't know why they had to have the same detailing on the helmet as they did on the jersey, because like you said, it was kind of too much. And then even Doug Flutie on the on NBC said, I'm not really sure who just tackled that guy because I kind of can't read the jersey numbers. So with all of the Shamrock Series jerseys, I don't know, like I keep waiting for them to do something a little bit more exciting and I just never really quite get it. But it is what it is. I don't know if, and they haven't really told us this or not, if they're not playing a Shamrock Series game next year because of the new Campus Crossroads project. They want to keep that home game.
Yeah, that's correct.
Don't know if they're going to bust out another jersey for that game or not. I'm in favor of yes, but at the same time, I don't know if I can get behind wearing a alternate jersey at Notre Dame Stadium.
You know what I want to see? I want to see the alternate green jerseys.
Like, yeah, that would be fine.
Green jerseys they wore against SC in 05, the Bush Push jerseys.
Yeah,
I want to see those. They haven't worn those at home in a really, really, really long time. I think that next year would be a very good opportunity to bring those back for a game. Because you're not going on the road for a Shamrock Series game with alternate jerseys. Let's see the classic green.
I tend to agree. The one thing I will say about those jerseys, and I've talked to some people, maybe even you, who thought I was nuts when I said this, but when Notre Dame – I was at that Bush Push game, and when Notre Dame came out wearing those green jerseys with gold – numbering and white trim at the time of twilight of day that it is in the middle of October at like 3:30, it was like you almost couldn't tell that the jerseys were green. Now I'm sure like people that were sitting in like lower sections could tell that they were green, but like you had to squint. It's like, wait, those don't exactly look navy blue, but like there's just that little bit of doubt. But like, I don't know. So I've said that to people that in that game, I kind of couldn't tell at first. And I had like older relatives there who were sitting near me who had absolutely no idea that they were wearing green jerseys until it got dark and the lights turned on. So that's kind of interesting with those. But
I can agree with you on that actually, because I was not at the Bush Push game. But the game I was at where they did the same thing was Brady Quinn and Jeff Samardzija and that group's last home game. They played against Army. I remember they won 41-9, I believe, and they did the same thing. They warmed up in blue and came out in green, and you kind of like double take. You're like, are those numbers actually gold? Like,
yes.
Are these jerseys green?
Yes, exactly. So I don't know. That's the one thing. I'd like to see him busted out for like a night game or something. We don't know if Notre Dame.
I think it wear them for USC next year. USC is at home in the middle of October. I'm sure it'll
Yeah.
be a night game.
Good chance.
Wear them then.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But back to actual football, I guess. I sort of threw you a curveball about one thing that you liked, one thing that you didn't. One thing that I liked, Notre
Another
Dame
thing I
was.
liked, Equanimeous St.
Ooh.
Brown, but go on.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a given. If you've listened to Danny on this podcast, you know that he really likes Equanimeous St. Brown.
He's
But
really good.
I mean, he's really good. I'm not saying he's not. But one thing that I liked was that Notre Dame, for the fourth time this year, outrushed its opponent, and for the fourth time this year, they won when they outrushed their opponent. So, in case you're keeping track, Notre Dame is 4-0 when they outrush their opponent. They are 0-6 when they do not.
I was going
So,
to ask you if there's some type of correlation there.
there might be a little bit. Keeping the ball on the ground, being, I don't know, spreading the ball out a little bit. Tends to help the Notre Dame offense, and who would have thought? But obviously, DeShone Kizer had a. I think he led the Irish in rushing. I'm not. No, maybe he didn't. I retract that
I would
statement.
have to go back and look at stats. I'll tell you in about 2 minutes. Keep talking.
Yeah. So, regardless of if DeShone Kizer led them in rushing, I'm going to say he didn't. But regardless if he did or not, he had a lot to do with the rushing total for Notre Dame, which was in the 200s at some point. But so, like I say, Notre Dame under Brian Kelly, they win a high percentage of the time. I think that might make them 43-7 under Brian Kelly when they outrush their opponent. And like I say, they're undefeated this season when they outrush their opponent. So that was one thing I liked. Obviously, it was against Army, who really doesn't have the horses to compete with Notre Dame up front. And yeah, what's the, you got the stats?
No, not yet, but just popped into
Oh.
my head. Is Army really that much better than Navy? Or
You
flip
mean
that.
worse?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of a question I had. I guess we'll find out soon because they're gonna play, but it's hard to. I think I would venture to say that Navy's probably better coached.
Yeah, but I mean, Navy beat Notre Dame, and they're two similar teams.
Very
They do
similar.
a similar job in recruiting. They attract similar personnel.
Yep.
And Notre Dame loses to one and blows out the other. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
It really is, I don't know, it really contributes, I guess, to the quandary that is this season. Why, Notre Dame has lost six games by like 30 some points total. Notre Dame is 4-6, and they have outscored, like, they have scored more total points than their opponents. And that was true before the Army game even started. That was true before the Navy game even started.
Well, I mean, the
So,
Navy game, they lost 1 point in that
right.
arena. And to get to
So,
these stats, Tarian Folsom led the team in rushing with 84 yards.
was Kaiser second?
He was second with 72. Adams was third with 70.
Okay. Yeah, I knew I looked at it, and I knew that there were a couple guys up there kind of in the same ballpark.
Also,
So,
Kevin Stefferson has really come on as of late. He had a good game against Navy. He had another very good game against Army.
yes. And he's really kind of taken over that. If Torrey Hunter was healthy for the Army game, he'd have played. But Kevin Stefferson has really kind of surpassed CJ Sanders, it seems, as
No,
far as that wide
well, I
receiver.
think Stefferson has surpassed Hunter enough in the outside role
Right.
because ideally Torrey Hunter's not your typical X or W receiver the way that Stefferson and Equanimeous St. Brown are. I
Yes.
think Torrey Hunter does project better in the slot position, which is
Right.
why he was moved there once Stefferson was deemed good enough to start, which is exactly what happened. He was good enough to start at, I believe, the X receiver. With Equanimeous St. Brown playing the W, which is
Right.
the both are outside receiver positions, and they bounced Hunter to the inside. So then
Right.
against Army, obviously Torrey Hunter Jr. did not play, so CJ Sanders got the start in his place in the slot receiver position.
Right. So, yeah, Stefferson's really come on well. I really like, and this is kind of what I want to talk about next, but whoever's the quarterback for Notre Dame this year, or next year, I'm sorry, is going to have two pretty solid bona fide targets on the outside, and then they'll probably fill in, depending on if Torrey Hunter comes back or not, they'll fill him in kind of in the slot there. If it's not him, it'll be C.J. Sanders most likely. And then Chase Claypool continues to be a guy that I like a lot.
I like him a lot.
They've put him kind of in like a tight end position, which is kind of interesting at times.
Like, it's kind of a role that I envisioned for Alizé Jones this year.
Yeah.
But obviously they would have used Alizé Jones more in that role.
Yeah.
But I that's kind of what I had envisioned for him, is similar to what Claypool was doing, have him out wide sometimes. What's really encouraging for me is that Notre Dame completed 18 passes against Army to 11 different receivers, and 10 of those receivers will be back next year. The only one that won't be is Durham Smythe. But also, Torrey Hunter might be back next year. They don't know yet. And Alizé Jones will likely be back next year. That's definitely good moving forward.
Yeah, and I don't know. So to get back to real quickly what I was saying about Chase Claypool, it's almost like they've started to use him in almost like an H-back, because it's not a true tight end. It's not like an inline tight end like that. It's more of a, I don't know. It's not a true H-back either, but it seems like they're moving him to try to create some matchups against linebackers and things, which
they're
trying
trying to put him in a position that would suit him best and where he can most help out the team. And it's
because it's not going to be on the outside because of
Going to take a little bit of time to figure out what's best for him, but he's a weapon and he's going to get on the field one way or another. They're just trying to figure out where the best spot to put him is.
I'm going to ask you another question that's somewhat related, that's not completely related.
Okay.
Who's throwing the passes for Notre Dame next year?
Brandon Wimbush.
You think?
Yep. You?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be Wimbush.
Because, you know, we can't have agreements on this show.
I think more likely than Brandon Wimbush, I kind of see, like, if Kaiser moves on to the NFL, which I don't know. I have mixed emotions about whether – not emotions, but mixed thoughts about whether I think
I agree with you there.
If he moves on, I could see Malik Zaire staying, because why leave if Kaiser moves on quick enough? Which, you know, if he's going to move on, he's got to declare by March or something.
Earlier than that.
You're probably right. I don't know. But anyways.
Spring ball is going on in March.
That's true. So if Kaiser's going to move on, why not stay if you're Malik Zaire? Because
you don't want to get beat out by someone else.
But would they really put Brandon Wimbush over Malik Zaire?
Yeah.
I don't know that they would.
I do. Are very high on Brandon Wimbush.
But at the same time, like, if you're Malik Zaire, there's no guarantee that wherever you graduate transfer, you're going to be the guy either, because you don't have a ton of college tape. You don't have a lot to go on and say, like, hey, oh, yeah, I led Notre Dame against a really bad Texas team, and then I was a backup for my entire year. So I don't know. I think that there's a chance that he could stay.
LSU with Leonard Fournette, too.
With help.
Okay.
He was a game manager at best, and they took him out after his helmet came off on the final drive, and Everett Golson led it in a somewhat ironic turn of events, because that was the way that, you know, Everett Golson was treated like Malik Zaire was, and the fact that they took him out to engineer game-winning drives in favor of Tommy Rees.
Keep Tommy Rees's name out of your mouth, man. It's my boy.
Is he on the coaching staff with the Bears these days? Is that right?
He's coaching somewhere. It might be Northwestern.
You're right.
He's coaching in college somewhere.
You're right. I knew he was, I don't know, I was thinking about Chicago, because he's a Chicago guy.
Oh, no, he is an offensive assistant for the San Diego Chargers.
No way.
Yes. Last year he coached it. He was a GA at Northwestern, and the Chargers hired him.
All right, fair enough. Okay, that's what I was
thinking. So he's hanging out with Manti Te'o.
All right, well, that's pretty dope.
Even though Manti Te'o popped his Achilles in this hurt.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. CJ Procise, Irish in the NFL, he had a big night for – a big-ish night for Seattle the other night.
Yeah, I didn't watch.
It was pretty – I mean, he – I think he got 23, 24 touches, like five catches and about like 18, 19 carries or so. So he had a big role. He started. He was really the only running back that they played a whole lot. So that was good to see.
In time for Thomas Rawls to be back.
Yeah. But at the very least, they can use him. They split him out quite a bit in a wide receiver type position, which obviously he played for a little bit at Notre Dame. So he burned a linebacker for 38 yards to set up a touchdown. So that was pretty cool. So shout out to CJ Procise for that. But seriously, do you think Brandon Wimbush, huh?
I do. I do, man.
Have you watched any tape on, oh boy, I forget his last name. The quarterback that they're getting out of Texas, his name's Avery something or another.
Is it Avery Davis?
Yes, it is Avery Davis.
No, I have not watched any tape on him.
That kid is good.
Well, yeah. So is Brandon Wimbush. Even you, when you saw Brandon Wimbush play in person in college, did you or did you not?
I did, against UMass.
You then texted me, Brandon Wimbush might win a Heisman Trophy at Notre Dame. Did you or did you not?
I'm not sure if that's what I said. I said he would be the next Johnny Manziel.
I'm pretty sure you mentioned Heisman.
That doesn't sound like me. I'm not saying I didn't, but it doesn't sound like something I would say.
Ben.
Then again, I did say that Notre Dame was going to go 5-0 down the stretch and then win the Natty next year. So.
You had Notre Dame in the playoff this year.
Okay, you had them losing two or three games this year. So, I mean,
three is closer to what they are than you.
Act like you're so much more right than me, Danny. Just act like it.
A lot.
I had them in the playoffs with one loss this year.
I was a lot less wrong.
Two more losses than I do.
I was a lot less wrong.
You were a little less wrong.
I was a lot less wrong.
You're still three losses off.
And you're six.
Five. I didn't think they were going to run the table. Whatever. But anyway, so I don't know. I think, however, that whatever person is running the quarterback position next year, whether it's Wimbush, whether it's Malik Zaire, whether it's DeShone Kizer, if he decides to stick around. That discussion about DeShone Kizer, I don't know. It's interesting because you just wonder, has Brian Kelly ran him out? Because his stock is going to be high. Even as poorly as he's looked at times, he's still one of the top three quarterbacks that's going to come out, you would think. So is now the time, especially seeing what happened to Jalen Smith last year and the trend of Notre Dame players that have been leaving South Bend early, you wonder if Kizer's going to be there. But back to what I was saying, I guess, initially, whoever it is, I hope they run the offense, and it looks a little bit more like the offense that Malik Zaire ran the last 8 minutes and 51 seconds or whatever it was against Army, because – I don't know. You and I were texting during that, and it's like, man, Malik looks good. Obviously, it's against Army. Obviously, there's no pressure. Obviously, there's a lot of different things at play. But, man, like when they run a little bit of read option and they can use the quarterback as a runner and get another extra blocker there, they were able to move the ball very, very easily. And I liked it. And I liked it a little bit more than just more of the traditional – big tall quarterback spread offense that they're running currently. But
you know who can do that?
Brandon Wimbush.
Yep.
And this Avery Davis guy out of Texas. Man, he's good. I'm high on him. So I can't wait for like 2020 when Avery Davis is leading us to a national championship. He's the truth.
That'll be dope.
When Donovan Jeter decommitted from Notre Dame, Avery Davis tweeted at him and said, come on, bro, it's Notre Dame. If that isn't like the definition of like he gets us, I don't know what is.
He gets us.
He gets us so much. So anyway, I don't know. Looking ahead to the last 2 weeks of the season before we wrap up here, they've got Virginia Tech next week. Virginia Tech just didn't look very good against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's kind of been a down year this year. However, they still run that wing tee, so that might have had something to do with it, I guess. But do you think Notre Dame, just looking ahead to next week, do you think Notre Dame gets a win on Senior Day against Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I think they figure out a way to win that game. I'm not so confident in them beating USC, but I do think they figure out a way to beat Virginia Tech and get to 5-6 and are fighting for their bowl eligibility lives in Southern California the following week.
Yeah, I just have a good feeling about this Virginia Tech game also. In year one of Brian Fuentes, is that how you say his name for Virginia Tech?
Something like that. He's no Beamer.
I shot my shot and tried to say it with authority, but
Fuentes? You know,
Fuentes. In year one, I feel like they've overachieved quite a bit. I don't think they're quite as good as people think they are. They are one of the top 10 teams in college football in tackles for loss. So that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if Notre Dame can run the ball and does run the ball. I think that'll have something to do with it. But I think it's going to come down again to DeShone Kizer making plays. And if he is able to avoid mistakes and they avoid the huge mistake like they haven't been able to do all year, but you know, maybe, I mean, they kind of did against Army. I think the Army game right before it really ups their confidence for it. I think that they can come out with a win on Senior Day. Now, like you said, traveling to Southern California last week of the season, not looking real good. So, I don't know. But like I say, I just want to see them win against Virginia Tech and send those seniors out right. So,
are you going?
I am not. Same. I have basketball obligations.
I have work.
Yeah, well, I haven't been to a Notre Dame game in November in South Bend in quite some time. I kind of just try to avoid those. So,
I went to one last year.
This year would be the year to go to one because hasn't been freezing cold yet. But
I went to the Wake Forest game last year. It wasn't bad.
I went to the Music City Bowl in Nashville.
How'd you enjoy Nashville?
Nashville is great. Nashville nice. Was wonderful.
Never been.
Yeah, the next time I go back, I mean, it was around New Year's Eve. That was the day before New Year's Eve, so there were just all kind of – I mean, there were Notre Dame people there. There were LSU people there. There were tourists there just to be in Nashville for New Year's. So it was just jam-packed. But I'd like to go when it isn't like a big, big deal when something's happening so that, I don't know, you feel like you can move around a little bit. But it's a pretty cool city.
Gotcha.
Can't wait to go back. So, but yeah, I think that's going to wrap it up for our Under the Dome podcast, the first one, but episode 15 of this series. Big thanks to Lisa Kelly, who came on and talked about her book. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed that. And Danny, where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter right now at DCunninghamCLE.
You can find me at bbeldon330. Check us out on Twitter for the website, which is at ndomerdaily. And we're assembling a staff over at Golden Domer Daily. If you're interested in writing and things, get at me. You can find my information all over the web, and you can find the, you know, if you tweet at the Twitter account, I'll see it. Check out all that stuff.
Tweet at me, I'll probably just give you Ben's phone number.
Probably. Just, I mean, it is what it is.
One day I'm going to go on that Twitter account, tweet out your phone number, make it our pinned tweet.
I feel like most people wouldn't even care.
Probably.
Any parting thoughts?
Nope.
All right. Well, we'll be back at you next week after a Virginia Tech win, we hope. And until then, we will keep it real and you do the same.